Okay, so here we are again in our savitri reading circle. Today, myself, Marco's here, Andrea, and John Robert. And in our last two sessions, we read and reread the first two cantos of Book Five. So we did Canto One, the destined meeting place, and Canto Two, Satyavan. And today we're going to move forward into Canto Three, Satyavan and Savitri. And as usual, we will begin with a meditation, and then Andrea will lead us off.
Book 5, The Book of Love, Canto 3, Satyavan and Savitri. Out of the voiceless mystery of the past, in a present ignorant of forgotten bonds, these spirits met upon the roads of time. Yet in the heart, their secret conscious selves at once aware grew of each other, warned by the first call of a delightful voice and a first vision of the destined face. As when being cries to being from its depths, behind the screen of the external sense, and strives to find the heart-disclosing word, the passionate speech revealing the soul's need. But the mind's ignorance veils the inner sight. Only a little breaks through our earth-made bounds. So now they met in that momentous hour. So utter the recognition in the deeps, the remembrance lost, the oneness felt and missed. Thus Satyavan spoke first to Savitri. O thou who comest to me out of time's silences, yet thy voice has wakened my heart to an unknown bliss. Immortal or mortal only in thy frame, for more than earth speaks to me from thy soul, and more than earth surrounds me in thy gaze. How art thou named among the sons of men? Whence hast thou dawned, filling my spirit's days, brighter than summer, brighter than my flowers, into the lonely borders of my life, O sunlight molded like a golden maid? I know that mighty gods are friends of earth. Amid the pageantries of day and dusk, long have I traveled with my pilgrim soul, moved by the marvel of familiar things.
Earth could not hide from me the power she veils. Even though moving mid an earthly scene in the common surfaces of terrestrial things, my vision saw, unblinded by her forms. The Godhead looked at me from familiar scenes. I witnessed the virgin bridals of the dawn behind the glowing curtains of the sky, or vying in joy with the bright morning steps, I paced along the slumbrous coasts of noon, or the gold desert of the sunlight crossed, traversing great wastes of splendor and of fire, or met the moon gliding amazed through heaven in the uncertain wideness of the night, or the stars marched on their long sentinel routes, pointing their spears through the infinitudes. The day and dusk revealed to me hidden shapes. Figures have come to me from secret shores, and happy faces looked from ray and flame. I have heard strange voices across the ether's waves. The centaur's wizard song has thrilled my ear. I have glimpsed the apsaras bathing in the pools. I have seen the wood nymphs peering through the leaves. The winds have shown to me their trampling lords. I have beheld the princes of the sun burning in thousand pillared homes of light. So now my mind could dream and my heart fear that from some wonder couch beyond our air, risen in a wide morning of the gods, thou drovest thy horses from the thunderer's worlds. Although to heaven thy beauty seems allied, Much rather would my thoughts rejoice to know that mortal sweetness smiles between thy lids, and thy heart can beat beneath a human gaze, and thy aureate bosom quiver with a look, and its tumult answer to an earthborn voice.
If our time-vexed affections thou canst feel, earth's ease of simple things can satisfy. If thy glance can dwell content on earthly soil, and this celestial summary of delight, thy golden body dally with fatigue, oppressing with its grace our terrain, while the frail, sweet, passing taste of earthly food delays thee, and the torrent's leaping wine descend. Let thy journey cease. Come down to us. Close is my father's creepered hermitage, screened by the tall ranks of these silent kings, sung to by voices of the hue-robed choirs, whose chants repeat, transcribed in music's notes, the passionate colored lettering of the boughs, and fill the hours with their melodious cry. Amid the welcome hum of many bees, invade our honeyed kingdom of the woods. There, let me lead thee into an opulent life. Bare, simple is the sylvan hermit life, yet is it clad with the jewelry of earth. Wild winds run, visitors midst the swaying tops, through the calm days heaven's sentinels of peace, couched on a purple robe of sky above, look down on a rich secrecy and hush, and the chambered nuptial waters chant within. Enormous, whispering, many formed around high forest gods have taken in their arms the human hour, a guest of their centuried pomps. Appareled are the morns in gold and green, sunlight and shadow tapestry the walls to make a resting chamber fit for thee. A while she paused, as if hearing still his voice, unwilling to break the charm, then slowly spoke. Musing, she answered, I am Savitri, princess of Madra. Who art thou? What name, musical on earth, expresses thee to men?
What trunk of kings watered by fortunate streams has flowered at last upon one happy branch? Why is thy dwelling in the pathless wood, far from the deeds thy glorious youth demands? Haunt of the anchorites and earth's wilder broods, where only with thy witness self thou roamst in nature's green, unhuman loneliness, surrounded by enormous silences and the blind murmur of primeval calms. And Satyavan replied to Savitri, in days when yet his sight looked clear on life, King Diyomatsena, once the Shalva, reigned through all the tract which from behind these tops, passing its days of emerald delight, in trusting converse with the traveler winds, turns, looking back towards the southern heavens, and leans its flank upon the musing hills. But equal fate removed her covering hand. A living night enclosed the strong man's paths. Heaven's brilliant gods recalled their careless gifts. took from blank eyes their glad and helping ray, and led the uncertain goddess from his side. Outcast from empire of the outer light, lost to the comradeship of seeing men, he sojourns in two solitudes, within and in the solemn rustle of the woods. Son of that king, I, Satyavan, have lived contented, for not yet of thee aware, in my high peopled loneliness of spirit, and this huge vital murmur kin to me, nursed by the vastness, pupil of solitude. Great nature came to her recovered child. I reigned in a kingdom of a nobler kind than man can build upon dull matter's soil. I met the frankness of the primal earth. I enjoyed the intimacy of infant God.
In the great tapestried chambers of her state, free in her boundless palace, I have dwelt, indulged by the warm mother of us all, reared with my natural brothers in her house. I lay in the wide, bare embrace of heaven. The sunlight's radiant blessing clasped my brow. The moonbeam's silver ecstasy at night kissed my dim lids to sleep. Earth's morns were mine. Lured by the faint murmurings, with the green-robed hours I wandered lost in woods, prone to the voice of winds and waters, partner of the sun's joy, a listener to the universal speech. My spirit satisfied within me knew godlike our birthright, luxuried our life, whose close belongings are the earth and skies. Before fate led me into this emerald world, aroused by some foreshadowing touch within, an early prescience in my mind approached the great dumb animal consciousness of earth, now grown so close to me, who have left old pomps to live in this grandiose murmur, dim and vast. Already I met her in my spirit's dream, as if to a deeper country of the soul, transposing the vivid imagery of earth through an inner seeing and sense, awakening came. A visioned spell pursued my boyhood's hours. All things the eye had caught in colored lines were seen anew through the interpreting mind, and in the shape it sought to seize the soul. An early child god took my hand that held, moved, guided by the seeking of his touch, bright forms and hues which fled across his sight. Limbed upon page and stone, they spoke to men. High beauty's visitants, my inmates were. The neighing pride of rapid life that roams wind-maned through our pastures, on my seeing mood cast shapes of swiftness. Trooping spotted deer against the vesper sky became a song of evening to the silence of my soul.
I caught for some eternal eye the sudden kingfisher flashing to a darkling pool, a slow swan silvering the azure lake, a shape of magic whiteness sailed through dream. Leaves trembling with the passion of the wind, pranked butterflies, the conscious flowers of air, and wandering wings in blue infinity, lived on the tablets of my inner sight. Mountains and trees stood there like thoughts from God. The brilliant longbills in their vivid dress, the peacock scattering on the breeze his moons, painted my memory like a frescoed wall. I carved my vision out of wood and stone. I caught the echoes of a word supreme and metered the rhythm beats of infinity and listened through music for the eternal voice. I felt a covert touch. I heard a call, but could not clasp the body of my God or hold between my hands the world mother's feet. In men, I met strange portions of a self that sought for fragments and in fragments lived. Each lived in himself and for himself alone, and with the rest joined only fleeting ties. Each passioned over his surface joy and grief, nor saw the eternal in his secret house. I conversed with nature, mused with the changeless stars, God's watchfires burning in the ignorant night, and saw upon her mighty visage fall a ray prophetic of the eternal's sun. I sat with the forest sages in their trance. There poured awakening streams of diamond light. I glimpsed the presence of the one in all, but still there lacked the last transcendent power, and matter still slept empty of its Lord.
The spirit was saved, the body lost and mute, lived still with death and ancient ignorance. The inconscient was its base, the void its fate. But thou hast come, and all will surely change. I shall feel the world mother in thy golden limbs and hear her wisdom in thy sacred voice. The child of the void shall be reborn in God. My matter shall evade the inconscient's trance. My body, like my spirit, shall be free. It shall escape from death and ignorance. And Savitri, musing still, replied to him, "Speak to me, speak more to me, speak more, O Satyavan. Speak of thyself and all thou art within. I would know thee as if we had ever lived together in the chamber of our souls. Speak till a light shall come into my heart, and my moved mortal mind shall understand what all the deathless being in me feels. It knows that thou art he my spirit has sought amidst earth's thronging visages and forms across the golden spaces of my life." And Satyavan, like a replying harp to the insistent calling of a flute, answered her questioning and let stream to her his heart in many colored waves of speech. "O golden princess, Savitri, more
Andrea? John Robert, do you hear her?
Her image is frozen too.
Okay. Why don't we give it a minute?
Yeah.
Were you hearing me all the way, or did I stop?
You stopped. You froze up just around where Savitri addresses Satyavan and says, "Speak more to me. Speak more." Just around there would be a good place to pick it up.
I'm not seeing it.
On page 406, maybe a third of the way.
Okay. Oh, there it is. Yeah.
I suppose you got a little further than that, but that's a good place. Yeah,
that's okay. Okay. Oh my, I'm sorry. I didn't know that it happened until I was finished. And Savitri, musing still, replied to him, "Speak more to me. Speak more, O Satyavan. Speak of thyself and all thou art within. I would know thee as if we had ever lived together in the chamber of our souls. Speak till a light shall come into my heart, and my moved mortal mind shall understand what all the deathless being in me feels. It knows that thou art he my spirit has sought amidst earth's thronging visages and forms across the golden spaces of my life." And Satyavan, like a replying harp to the insistent calling of a flute, answered her questioning and let stream to her his heart in many colored waves of speech. "O golden princess, perfect Savitri, more I would tell than failing words can speak of all that thou hast meant to me unknown. All that the lightning flash of love reveals in one great hour of the unveiling gods. Even a brief nearness has reshaped my life. For now I know that all I lived and was moved towards this moment of my heart's rebirth. I look back on the meaning of myself, a soul made ready on earth's soil for thee."
Once were my days like days of other men. To think and act was all, to enjoy and breathe. This was the width and height of mortal hope. Yet there came glimpses of a deeper self that lives behind life and makes her act its scene. A truth was felt that screened its shape from mind. A greatness working towards a hidden end. And vaguely through the forms of earth, there looked something that life is not and yet must be. I groped for the mystery with the lantern thought. Its glimmerings lighted with the abstract word and a half visible. Its glimmerings lighted with the abstract word. A half-visible ground, and traveling yard by yard, it mapped a system of the self and God. I could not live the truth it spoke and thought. I turned to seize its form in visible things, hoping to fix its rule by mortal mind, imposed a narrow structure of world law upon the freedom of the infinite. A hard, firm skeleton of outward truth, a mental scheme of a mechanic power. This light showed more the darknesses unsearched. It made the original secrecy moral cult. It could not analyze its cosmic veil or glimpse the wonder worker's hidden hand and trace the pattern of his magic plans. I plunged into an inner seeing mind and knew the secret laws and sorceries that make of matter's mind bewildered slave. Mind's bewildered slave. The mystery was not solved, but deepened more. I strove to find its hints through beauty and art, but form cannot unveil the indwelling power. Only it throws its symbols at our hearts. It evoked a mood of self, invoked a sign of all the brooding glory hidden in sense. I lived in the ray, but faced not to the sun.
I looked upon the world and missed the self. And when I found the self, I lost the world. My other selves I lost, and the body of God. The link of the finite with the infinite. The bridge between the appearance and the truth. The mystic aim for which the world was made. The human sense of immortality. But now the gold link comes to me with thy feet, and his gold sun has shone on me from thy face. For now another realm draws near with thee, and now diviner voices fill my ear. A strange new world swims to me in thy gaze, approaching like a star from unknown heavens. A cry of spheres comes with thee, and a song of flaming gods. I draw a wealthier breath, and in a fierier march of moments move. My mind transfigures to a rapturous seer. A foam leap traveling from the waves of bliss has changed my heart and changed the earth around, all with thy coming fills. Air, soil, and stream wear bridal raiment to be fit for thee, and sunlight grows a shadow of thy hue, because of change within me by thy look. Come nearer to me from thy car of light, on this green sward, disdaining not our soil. For here are secret spaces made for thee, whose caves of emerald long to screen thy form. Wilt thou not make this mortal bliss thy sphere? Descend, O happiness, with thy moon-gold feet, enrich earth's floors upon whose sleep we lie. O my bright beauty's princess Savitri, by my delight and thy own joy compelled, enter my life, thy chamber and thy shrine. In the great quietness where spirits meet, led by my hushed desire into my woods, let the dim rustling arches over thee lean. One with the breath of things eternal live, thy heart beats near to mine, till there shall leap enchanted from the fragrance of the flowers a moment which all murmurs shall recall and every bird remember in its cry.
Allured to her lashes by his passionate words, her fathomless soul looked out at him from her eyes. Passing her lips in liquid sounds, it spoke. This word alone she uttered and said all. O Satyavan, I have heard thee and I know that thou and only thou art he. Then down she came from her high carven car, descending with a soft and faltering haste, her many-hued raiment glistening in the light, hovered a moment over the wind-stirred grass, mixed with the glimmer of her body's ray, like lovely plumage of a settling bird. Her gleaming feet upon the green gold sward scattered a memory of wandering beams and lightly pressed the unspoken desire of earth, cherished in her too brief passing by the soil. Then flitting like pale brilliant moths, her hands took from the sylvan verge's sunlit arms a load of their jewel faces clustering swarms, companions of the springtime and the breeze. A candid garland set with simple forms, her rapid fingers taught a flower song, the stanzaid movement of a marriage hymn. Profound in perfume and immersed in hue, they mixed their yearnings' colored signs and made the bloom of their purity and passion one. A sacrament of joy in treasuring palms, she brought flower symbol of her offered life, then with raised hands that trembled a little now at the very closeness that her soul desired, this bond of sweetness, their bright union's sign, she laid on the bosom coveted by her love.
As if inclined before some gracious God, who has out of his mist of greatness shone to fill with beauty his adorer's hours, she bowed and touched his feet with worshiping hands. She made her life his world for him to tread, and made her body the room of his delight, her beating heart a remembrancer of bliss. He bent to her and took into his own their married yearning, joined like folded hopes. As if a whole rich world suddenly possessed, wedded to all he had been, became himself, an inexhaustible joy made his alone. He gathered all Savitri into his clasp. Around her, his embrace became the sign of a locked closeness through slow, intimate years, a first sweet summary of delight to come, one brevity intense of all long life. In a wide moment of two souls that met, she felt her being flow into him as in waves a river pours into a mighty sea. As when a soul is merging into God to live in him forever and know his joy, her consciousness grew aware of him alone, and all her separate self was lost in his. As a starry heaven encircles happy earth, he shut her into himself in a circle of bliss, and shut the world into himself and her. A boundless isolation made them one. He was aware of her enveloping him, and let her penetrate his very soul, as is a world by the world's spirit filled, as the mortal wakes into eternity, as the finite opens to the infinite. Thus were they in each other lost awhile. Then, drawing back from their long ecstasy's trance, came into a new self and a new world.
Each now was a part of the other's unity. The world was but their twin self-findings seen, or their own wedded being's vaster frame. On the high glowing cupola of the day, fate tied a knot with morning's halo threads, while by the ministry of an auspice hour, heart-bound before the sun, their marriage fire, the wedding of the eternal Lord and spouse, took place again on earth in human forms. In a new act of the drama of the world, the united two began a greater age. In the silence and murmur of that emerald world, and the mutter of the priest wind's sacred verse, amid the choral whispering of the leaves, love's twain had joined together and grew one. The natural miracle was wrought once more. In the immutable ideal world, one human moment was eternal made. Then down the narrow path where their lives had met, he led and showed to her her future world, love's refuge and corner of happy solitude. At the path's end, through a green cleft in the trees, she saw a clustering line of hermit roofs and looked now first on her heart's future home, the thatch that covered the life of Satyavan. Adorned with creepers and red climbing flowers. Red climbing flowers, it seemed a sylvan beauty in her dreams, slumbering with brown body and tumbled hair in her chamber inviolate of emerald peace. Around it stretched the forest's anchorite mood, lost in the depths of its own solitude. Then, moved by the deep joy she could not speak, a little depth of it quivering in her words, her happy voice cried out to Satyavan.
My heart will stay here on this forest verge and close to this thatched roof while I am far. Now of more wandering it has no need, but I must haste back to my father's house, which soon will lose one loved accustomed tread and listen in vain for a once cherished voice. For soon I shall return, nor ever again oneness must sever its recovered bliss, or fate sunder our lives while life is ours. Once more she mounted on the carven car, and under the ardor of a fiery noon, less bright than the splendor of her thoughts and dreams, she sped swift-reined, swift-hearted, but still saw in still lucidities of sight's inner world, through the cool-scented woods' luxurious gloom, on shadowy paths between great rugged trunks, pace towards a tranquil clearing, Satyavan. A nave of trees enshrined the hermit thatch, the new deep covert of her felicity, preferred to heaven, her soul's temple and home. This now remained with her, her heart's constant scene. End of Canto 3. End of book 5.
I always think when reading this canto or some of Sherbindo's other cantos, that no human being can write like this. And at the same time, I just thought that this is the promise of the future, this kind of consciousness.
Yeah, breathtaking.
Quite the dialogue here.
Mm.
True. I almost don't want to talk because I'm not sure we'll I don't think we can improve on
no.
what was just shared.
There is in this, on page 408, there is a line that mother gave to my father when he asked her through the mail. He was still living in Holland. He asked me to ask mother for a mantra from Savitri. And the line she gave him, enter my life, thy chamber and thy shrine. It's at the bottom of 408. She was very happy with his request, wow. I was told. And how by one look, because of change within me by thy look, by one look, everything can change. Right?
I think there's some lines here, maybe on 406, that get to some kind of nub or some, I don't know, unique aspect maybe of Sri Aurobindo's teaching, where Satyavan, I believe, is addressing Savitri and says, the child of the void shall be reborn in God. My matter shall evade the inconscient trance. My body, like my spirit, shall be free. It shall escape from death and ignorance. My body, like my spirit, shall be free is the one that I think is like new or unique, like as a view. Traditionally, we would escape the body's imprisonment in the body or condemnation to the body in order to be free in the spirit. And we've gone through a lot of that in these previous cantos of spiritual unfolding and exploration and adventure and development. But there's this like promise of an incarnation of freedom, an incarnation of the divine here that's uttered. And in response to that, Savitri, who's musing still, like listening to this discourse, replied to him, speak more to me, speak more, O Satyavan. Speak of thyself and all thou art within. I would know thee as if we had ever lived together in the chamber of our souls. This like calling to each other to speak, to fill them with their being. It's such a high, I don't know what to call it, like a high address, form of address or something. It's like, how much can we pour into our speech? Like how much of this overflowing feeling of beauty and bliss and power and love can we pour into our language? It's just so over the top.
And into our bodies.
And into our bodies. Right?
How much can we actually receive all the way in? Yeah.
And the result of Satyavan's words, Sri Aurobindo says on 409, right after the break, that her soul was lured up to her lashes, up to her eyes. And then she looked out at him.
Allured to her lashes by his passionate words, her fathomless soul looked out at him from her eyes.
That's amazing.
That one slipped by me the first time, actually.
Yeah. Oh.
Those two lines give me the chills.
I must say it's a pretty amazing to be reading this just before Jeffrey, Jen, and I actually will be meeting for the first time.
I had this thought it would be really fun, maybe, if there were three readers and you each played a part. And then there was the narrator. We acted it out. Like
we will probably read this together.
I think that would be wonderful. That I think that sounds like a wonderful thing to do. But I'm curious. What's interesting is there's an isolation, right? And then there's a shift at the end from one way of being together to another. It seems to go from.
Where is that again?
There's a shift from this intense.
Like, I know.
Page 410. 410.
410.
At the bottom, as a starry, kind of the last quarter, as a starry heaven encircles happy earth, he shut her into himself in a circle of bliss and shut the world into himself and her. A boundless isolation made them one. He was aware of her enveloping him and let her penetrate his very soul, as is a world by the world's spirit filled. As the mortal wakes into eternity, as the finite opens to the infinite. And then on the next page, in a new act of the drama of the world, the united two began a greater age. I'm going to have to find exactly where the line was, but well, it continues to in the immutable ideal world, one human moment was eternal made. But there's this almost sense I got that this isolation itself is a passing phase that opens to another step, as it were, like in the relationship. Like this is some kind of culmination, you know, or conjunction or consummation, you know, of their meeting and they're filling each other. It's like two stars, you know, fuse and they let out a huge burst of light. And then there's a new life, you know, that kind of it outshines everything, like in the sky for a moment. And then there's a new phase of being with each other, but also in this wide, in this wider world, a kind of transfigured world. That's what I sensed happened, but I only felt it maybe under the surface of the words, and maybe it wasn't explicitly said, or maybe it's said and I'm not able to pinpoint exactly where. But she's going to join him in this hermitage. She has to go back to her father and complete her affairs there, and then she's returning to this new life.
Well, he says at the bottom of page 410, he says, they came into a new self and a new world.
Yes.
And in the next page, he says, in a new act of the drama of the world, united two became a greater age.
That's it.
Reminds me of earlier.
You got muted.
Reminds me of the earlier passages where Sri Aurobindo talked about the two in one and their eternal dance. And I think he's referring back to that here and saying, this is a new phase. This is, sometimes he talks about the Divine Mother. When Ashwapati met the Divine Mother, he talks about her, I think that's what it, where it is. He talks about her once more. She joined in her efforts with the manifestation. So it's like there's a kind of this periodical new beginning or initiation. And this, Sri Aurobindo explicitly says, this is the new act of a greater age. Is that what you were talking about, Marco?
Kind of. And now that you're saying that, it reminds me of the life divine and the beginning of the life divine. There's a scripture from the Vedas. I forgot which Veda, at the very beginning of the book, which is invoking the eternal dawn or the coming of the renewal of the dawn, of endless dawns. Is what it was. And one gets the sense that this drama, as it's being fulfilled and played out, has occurred many times before, countless times before, and will occur countless times again. But it's such a vast cycle that one has to pass through ages of forgetting, of struggle, of being lost, of returning, finding like the path, finding that sense of spiritual freedom, but then being feeling being unfulfilled by it, and finally then returning through, you know, how many eons, and you know how to this moment of reunion and the recognition and knowing that the other has been with the self all along, in a way, as like the shadow of one's seeking, the shadow of one's desire, and then to be reunited, it initiates a new cycle. I guess, I mean, that's me speculating a little bit, but that's the sense one gets.
I thought your image of the two stars uniting, and to me, that when you were talking, I was reminded of a supernova and the explosion that happens in a supernova, which is born the elements of the periodic table. So the elements that go into these bodies that we have, and everything that's around us. A new, whole new beginning.
We are stardust. We are gold.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We've got to get ourselves back to the garden.
Back to the garden. That's right. Oh, I love that line. Back to the garden. That just resonated through my whole being. Still, when I hear the song, it's like, oh, yes.
Oh. Hold on 1 second. I have a little one visiting. We have an emergency to deal with, just some water. We have a filter, and if you overfill it, it'll overflow.
Yes.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
So
you have to go tend to it.
Yeah, I should go take care of that.
Sure.
Well, what a delight.
Yeah.
To share this with you. Oh.
Yeah, and we have we'll do this again. Hopefully Jeffrey Jen will join us next time, and
for sure. And then we will be together.
And you will. The stars will come collide.
Yeah, stars come colliding.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah.
So good to be here with you.
So, John Robert, would you like to do a little meditation with me before we actually step out?
Sure.
And then the recording will stop automatically, right, Marco?
Yeah, I will make you the host, so that way I can step away. And whenever you leave the meeting, the recording will stop.
It'll stop. Great. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. So, shall we just have a little meditation?
Mm-hmm. May all be well, and bon voyage.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, yes. Blessings. Till next time.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.